Thank you for listening to this message from Every Nation Church, Cyberjaya, and we hope it will have a positive, memorable impact.
All right, good evening, guys. Oh man, you guys are a bit down. Okay, let me tell you what. Can you help me to cheer up someone beside you? Wow, I see some slapping going on. Is that how you cheer people up? Oh, I don't know. Maybe they get more depressed later. Yes. Just tell them. Okay, I tell you what. You know how to cheer someone up? You compliment them on how good looking they are. Okay, so give a free compliment. Okay, be more generous. Okay, wow, you're so handsome. You're so beautiful here today. You see, people are already getting very happy. Okay, yes, we love it when people acknowledge how awesome we are. Okay, good. Yes, thank you. All right. I feel like I'm missing something, but I'm not sure what. Okay, never mind. Let's get through this, okay? Now, real interesting. I don't know if my son is around. It's a bit echoey. You guys agree? Yeah? All right. They'll figure it out. And so my parents are taking care of him, and we sent him off for the weekend because we were kind of busy this weekend to prepare for the sermon, and my wife, who has been working nonstop, needed some rest, okay, because she does a bit of ministry on the weekends, and so after Sunday night, it's back to work again on Monday, so it's like almost nonstop for her, especially, okay, but enough about that, okay, but what I'm trying to say is, as we miss Ender, okay, one of the things that I really start to miss him for is his rascalness, okay, his manipulativeness, okay. Nowadays, he likes to kind of manipulate us to watch TV, okay. And his favorite show, can you guess what? It's a baby. This one. He likes Boss Baby, okay? So he's always asking for Boss Baby, can he watch, okay? And often we tell him no, okay? He can't do that. He can't watch, right? Because we don't want him to be overly influenced and overly, addicted to TV. And so now he has a new style, okay? My wife was just telling me how he approached her, okay? And so when my wife comes back from work, okay, that's when he has a chance to get to watch TV because we rely on her phone's data, her Wi-Fi hotspot, then we can stream and all that, okay? But he would wait eagerly, okay, for my wife to come home. And then once she comes home, the first thing he'll ask, okay, he won't ask for TV, okay? He will try to reason. He will ask mommy, watch TV. Okay, so first he asked mommy to watch the TV first, all right? And his thinking is, if mommy watched TV, maybe he has a chance to get the phone. Okay, mommy watched the TV, then mommy will pass him the phone, and he watched his thing. Mommy will watch her drama, her Marco Polo, or whatever that she watches. Okay, and when mommy says no, mommy don't want to watch TV, right? And then Ender will say, Ender watch TV. Okay, so now it's his turn. So he's trying to manipulate the situation, manipulate us, tug at our heartstrings just to get what he wants. Okay, by the way, he already watched the whole season of Boss Baby. Okay, there's no more new episodes and he just likes to rewatch it over and over again. Okay, now that is just baby. Okay, he's only 2.5 years old. But I think all of us can kind of relate. Okay, especially when it comes to God. Okay, a lot of us, in fact, all of us are wondering, okay? And you may not be wondering this all the time, but sometimes in our lives, we are just wondering how we can get God to give us what we want, right? If only there was a book, if only there was a formula, a magic kind of code, something, that we say, and when we say this, God will exactly give us, what we feel like we want or we need, whether it's TV, whether it's, whatever it is in life, whether it's for providence, whether it's for healing, whether it's, for that job, for that promotion, for that good A's, all the students here are super stressed now because they're in the middle of their exams, okay? And so all of us, we are really wondering how to get something from God, right? And if there was a book, a DVD, a sermon, man, that sermon would be super popular, okay? The sermon entitled, How to Get God to Give You What You Want, right? But there's no such sermon, okay? And today, we're going to talk a little bit about that because this is what the pastor Andy Stanley says, and I love it, okay? He says this, It's impossible, okay, to have an authentic relationship with someone whom you're always trying to get something. True or not? You believe it? You yourself have maybe put yourself in a situation or in a relationship where you felt like, man, you know, it's not working out. This other person always wants something from me. It's draining me. You know what I'm saying, right? So we all kind of agree with this statement. Yet, when it comes to God, it feels like all of us, actually, we really are trying to, you know, figure out how to wrestle something out of God. Okay, and that's where the series picks up today. Okay, and so we are continuing this series. I think this will be the second last one. Next will be the last one, called Beyond the Signs. Okay, everybody say Beyond the Signs. All right, and real quick, if you haven't been following us throughout this series, the premise of this series is very simple. The Apostle John, okay, who wrote this, the book of John that we're going to explore, the reason why he and the disciples and the people that follow Jesus, the reason they follow Jesus is not because of faith. It's not because somehow they got some kind of miraculous, you know, belief and then they just followed. No, the reason, okay, they followed Jesus was because of what they saw and because of what they heard. Okay, that was the reason. And so, later on in life, okay, this is all earlier in John's, you know, prime time of his life, okay, he was following Jesus. Later on, when he was an old man, and probably he was about to die, okay, he's about to perish, you know, he's not going to live forever. And he convinced himself, maybe people around him were saying, you know, John, you know, you went through such a wonderful thing, you know, you were walking with Jesus, you were there, you were an eyewitness, you were right beside him when he said those things. Maybe you should write about it, okay, and that's where we get this book called John, okay, and it's one of the four Gospels, okay? And so, how John lays out the book is like this, okay? It's like this, or what he wanted to do. And so, in his book of John, he gives us events, okay, that are happening. And he's saying that these aren't just random events that, you know, I somehow remembered in my old life that, oh, you know, it was so nice, I followed him and this is what Jesus did. It was not just some random acts of kindness that Jesus did because he had compassion on people. No, these were very specific events that were actually signs. Okay, and these signs, they pointed to something, and these signs themselves serve as the evidence, okay, of who Jesus is, his identity, who he said he was. And John's prospect was, it was enough for John for him to believe in Jesus because of these signs. And he hopes you and I, it will be enough for us as we step into John's shoes, as we hear what John hears and see what John sees, that for all of us, for you and me, that it will be enough, okay, for us to come and believe about Jesus. And so for John, it wasn't so much about what Jesus did, not events and all that, as much as he figured out later who Jesus was. It was the signs that were pointing to who Jesus really said he was. Okay, and so for those of you, how many of you have watched Endgame already? All right, I'm going to give you a spoiler. No, okay. But the spoiler to this is Jesus said that he is the Son of God. Okay, that's the spoiler. So sorry, okay. But a lot of you know this, okay. But it was really pointing to that, all right. And not only that, he did address that even when we come to Jesus, even when we come to God, there is still something that we can get out of it, okay, what I was talking about before. And so at the end of his book, he writes this, but these are written, okay, the things, the events, the signs that he was saying, these are written so that you and I may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, okay, you and I, we make it something. Okay, many of you know this verse. We've been saying it throughout the whole series. Okay, but we'll pick it up later at the end of the message. Okay, and so today we are in our fourth sign chronologically, but fifth sign overall in the series. I know it's confusing, but don't worry. Okay, we're in our fourth sign. The last week we left Jesus at Jerusalem. Okay, he was healing the disabled guy, right? Now The story picks up in John chapter 6. Okay, and it says this. After this, okay, so a period of time has passed since Jerusalem. Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Okay, so now he's back up north again. Jerusalem is down south. Galilee is up north. Okay, and so he went away to the other side of the sea. And let's continue. And a large crowd was following him, okay? Because, like I was saying, they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. So up until this point, Jesus was healing he was doing amazing things. He started off with something really small. He saved a wedding, turned water into wine, and then he healed, okay, the official son from far away. It wasn't even like face to face, right? And then he then healed in Jerusalem next to the temple, next to the pool, this crippled guy. And presumably, in the way that the Bible describes him, he was probably the worst one off. Because around there were other cripples, not just the guy. All right, so he took this guy 38 years, I believe, right? 38 years crippled, man. The worst, and he healed him miraculously. And so by now, the rumors and the legend has started to spread. And so he began drawing a large crowd, and people wanted to see. All right, it's just like if someone famous, okay, or someone that we really admire, or someone that does miracles show up today, man, we want to go and see whether it's true or not, right? We want to see for our own eyes whether this guy can really perform some of these miracles that people claim that he can, okay? And so by now, a large crowd was following him, yeah? And so we continue on. Jesus went up on a mountain. So this could be a hillside, it's an unspecified mountain. And there he sat down with his disciples. Okay? And then it adds this very interesting kind of side note, okay, which says this. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Okay? Everybody say Passover. Okay. We have to remember this because it's a hint of what Jesus was trying to say about himself, okay? So remember, Passover, we'll come back to this. There's a few of these hints. We'll put it together later, okay? So the first hint is Passover. And then, while he was sitting in the mountain with the disciples, lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that the large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" Okay? So Jesus and the disciples, they were kind of like where you guys are. You guys, you know, we're just hanging out by the mountainside and we see people coming up the mountain, okay? And it's a large crowd. And Jesus, almost comically, okay, he turns to his one of the disciples, Philip, and asks him, "Philip, where are we going to, you know, go and get food that's enough to feed all these people?" And Philip was actually from the region. Okay, he was one of the natives there, and he was probably asking, you know, Philip, you know the area, you know where are the best food and where's the best restaurant? How can we, you know, go and feed these people, right? And of course, Philip turns to him, and Philip was wondering, you know, what do you mean feed people? Because up to this point, Jesus has only been healing. What we do is we heal people, not feed them. He's not expecting to feed anybody, actually, okay? And later, when John was writing this, he inserted the next verse to kind of explain why Jesus did that. And he said this to test him, "For he himself knew what he would do," okay? And so Jesus was just testing Philip at this point, okay? He's not expecting Philip to give an answer. And yet, Philip did, okay? And this is Philip's answer. All right, next verse. He answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread will not be enough for each of them to get a little, okay? He's saying that even if you get 200 denarii worth of bread, okay, this is estimated about 8 months worth of salary. Okay, that means you work for 8 months. Even then, you give all 100%. I said, you will not be enough to feed every one of us just a little bite. You will be not enough. So Philip was basically saying in a long way, no, it is impossible. There's no way we can feed anyone of these people. Right? And then, what was an even funnier answer is, since we cannot feed all these people, this other disciple, okay, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, said to Jesus, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" So Andrew, now Andrew's the comical one. Okay, it's impossible to feed all these people, all right? But there's a guy here, there's a little boy among us who brought his lunch with him. It was 5 barley loaves. Again, barley loaves are kind of like the poor people's food at the time. Right, because even if they would eat bread, they would prefer wheat bread. But this is barley, so it's like a very cheap loaf. And the 2 fish here, a lot of people say that, a lot of commenters say that this is not fresh fish. Okay, these are those preserved fish, maybe even pickled fish. Okay, so it's just basically his lunch. And comically, he says then to Jesus, "Okay, we do have a little bit of food here." And I don't know what was going on in Andrew's mind or even the disciples' mind. Was he thinking that if each one was take a little bit of a lick out of the thing, maybe it will be enough to feed the crowd? Now, it doesn't say how big the crowd is. We'll get there in the next verse, okay? And this is what Jesus replied, okay? "Have the people sit down," okay? "Have all these people sit down. Now, there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down, about 5,000 in number." Okay, this is the second hint. The first one is the Passover. This is the 5,000 in number. And this number was only counting the men. Okay, so some estimates put it at there was actually about 20,000 people, including women and children. So men, women, and children all at the side, all gathered together at this mountain. Okay, and here it is, there's a boy with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and they're expecting to feed 20,000, okay, when, you know, 8 months worth of our salary won't be enough to feed all of us. How to feed everyone with 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? And so, this whole thing must be what I imagine to be very comical, because Jesus seems to then take it very seriously, what Andrew was saying. And so Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. So he basically organized the 20,000 people, plus 12 disciples, probably not 12 at this point. I have to find out how many disciples is following him right now, but I don't think it's, I think it probably isn't all 12. Okay, but never mind. There were a lot of people, basically, okay? And so, he organized. Can you imagine you get 20,000 people? Just to get you guys to sit down, it really takes, like, you know, 5 minutes. But 20,000 of us. And to distribute the... You know when we distribute sometimes the communion, right? The little wafer and the little juice? That takes a long time. This must take hours, okay? Just to distribute the food, let alone eat it and wait for them to finish, okay? But he did it anyway, and he says, you know what, just take as much as you want. You want to lick it, you want to, you know, take... So it just passed around, okay? Now, verse 12. This is the amazing part, okay? "And when they had eaten their fill," okay, so all 20,000 people, "when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, 'Gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost.'" Other translation, "nothing may be wasted." So we tap out the food, okay? Whatever that's, you know, right? You guys go restaurant, the leftover food, there's a lot. We kind of pack it and go home, eat the next day, give to someone, right? And so Jesus don't want to waste any food. And so he asked, okay, let's just gather up whatever that was not finished so that, we cannot waste it, right? And for many people, the feeding of the 5,000 men, the 20,000 people, that was the miracle. But for me, I felt like the next verse, that's the even bigger miracle. Because it says here, "And so they gathered them up, all the leftovers, okay, and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten them." Okay, so the fish all gone, but there were leftover loaves. And what is amazing here, the Bible is seems to tell us that there was more in the leftover than there was in the 5 loaves in the first place, you know? And so Jesus did this amazing miracle where he multiplied 5 loaves and 2 fish, enough for 20,000 people to eat. And not only that, there was more leftover than when it first started. Now that is amazing, okay? And so, if you were there, And you were experienced, and you were part of the 20,000, okay, that are seated here, that got past the bread and the fish, and you ate, and you were full. And after that all is said and done, what would your reaction be? What would your thinking be, right, to this guy, to what just happened, to what you were experiencing, right? This is how the people reacted. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." And so here, it seems like they were so amazed by the miracle that happened. They, for a second, it would seem that they identified who Jesus is correctly. Okay? But side note here, normally people don't refer to Jesus as the prophet. People only refer to Jesus as the prophet in those days is when you don't really know Jesus. Okay, when you maybe you just heard of him and said, "Wow, this guy's so amazing, he can do miracles. He must be a prophet." Okay? So seemingly they correctly identified who Jesus was. But later we'll read on, this was not so. Okay? Now, if I imagine myself, okay, to be in that situation, I don't know about you, okay, but I'm kind of a little bit selfish and greedy. After that miracle, man, I tell you, I would immediately pull out my wallet, okay? I would look in my wallet and think to myself, man, I have 10 ringgit here and I have 5 ringgit here. If Jesus can multiply, okay, the 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed all of us, what can he do with my cash? And then immediately I would pray really hard to God that in my wallet there's at least 100 ringgit note. Okay, forget about 5, 10. I want to multiply the 100 ringgit note because it's so amazing. All right, so I don't know about you. In fact, if we had time, if Jesus was here and he was feeding all of us, I would ask you, "Hey guys, can you make sure Jesus don't leave?" Okay, I will come right back. And I will go opposite, okay, to where our old church used to gather. Do you guys realize that every weekend there is a red Ferrari that's parked outside there? You guys seen that Ferrari? I don't know whose is it. Maybe it's one of us, okay? I would go over to that guy. I would beg him, "Can you just borrow me a Ferrari for, you know, just 5 minutes? I will return it, okay? You know, I wouldn't do anything to it." And I would drive, and I would give this Ferrari to Jesus. In fact, I would be so generous. I'll give all of you one Ferrari each. I would just take the leftover Ferraris, okay, that nobody wants. Okay, yeah, I'm a pretty nice guy, right? And so, it's like that. Most of the time, whenever we see, you know, God doing something great, God doing something, we tend to get trapped in being enamored, in being wowed by the miracle instead of what the miracle, what the sign was pointing towards. Okay, and if you've been Christian for a long time, you grew up in those maybe about 10, 15 years ago, it's more hit, if I can say. It's more in to have, like, you know, prophets come, to have healers come, and we'll bring our... Lately, every nation, we had one, right, from Battle coming here, and yeah, he's in the healing ministry. And almost always, okay, everybody who goes to these things, right, they will always come back and say, "Wow, it was so amazing. You know, I saw my mom, right, the leg wasn't, you know, straight, there was one shoulder, and then when he prayed, it became, you know, I saw people from wheelchair walking, I saw people jumping, or whatever it is." We are always so wowed by the miracle, we tend to forget who is behind these miracles, right or not, right? And so this is what the people did, okay? And so let me just go to the next verse, okay? And you'll understand. "Perceiving then, okay, that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself." Okay, this is the third hint. The first one was the Passover. The second one was, what was it? Somehow I lost my thoughts. First one was the Passover. Second one was the 5,000 men. Third one was they wanted to make him king. Okay, now, for them, the first century Jews, okay, For them, it's not that they wanted to multiply 100 ringgit or get a lot of Ferraris. For them, the biggest thing for every Jew is that they have to celebrate the Passover. And the Passover was a reminder that God brought them out of slavery, which they are very much in the same situation now under the Roman Empire. And so every Jew then, they were hoping and they were waiting that God will send another Moses, right? Another prophet to bring them out of, you know, whatever Roman rule that they had, so that they can have their own nation, that they can rule themselves, basically. All right, so they were all hoping for that. And so, for the 20,000 or so people there, as they were eating, as they were, you know, having their fill of their bread and their fish, they must be imagining that this guy must be that prophet. That's why I said they recognize him as the prophet, right? But it wasn't because they recognized who Jesus is. It's more of they wanted for themselves what Jesus could do for them, what God could do for them, okay? And so for them, the first one was the Passover. And so they're going to celebrate another Passover, and they're hoping this was the Moses. Not only that, there were 5,000 men. This was a very specific count because 5,000 men makes up, a legion, okay? A legion of Roman soldiers. The term is legion, 5,000? Let's just go with 5,000, okay? Believe me for a while. You can go back and check. But 5,000 was basically a unit, okay? It was a soldier, kind of army unit, warfare unit that they are hoping that would take over the whole kingdom, right? And so in their mind, they must be imagining, we're going to make Jesus king. 5,000 of us are going to march down to Jerusalem. And along the way, we are going to rally people, okay? We're going to get this ball rolling. As we are marching there, we're calling all the other men from the different towns and the villages to come and join us to have this defiant march, okay, against tyranny, against our oppressors, against the Roman Empire, okay? And then we're going to conquer it. They are hoping that this was the Messiah, okay? But, of course, Jesus, knowing this, knowing what they were thinking, okay, he saw it in their faces, okay? He kind of got to slip out, you know, while they were still eating. Nobody noticed where Jesus was. He kind of withdrew again to somewhere by himself, okay? And so, if you guys don't get the picture already, it's something like this. You guys remember Braveheart? Right? The Scots were facing off against the English. They were scared. English was so many, there's just a few Scots. And then Mel Gibson, okay, what's Braveheart's name again? William Wallace. Oh, all right, man. It's a Braveheart fan. Anybody here, you have not seen Braveheart? Not seen Braveheart? Okay, five. Okay, I'm gonna spoil it for you, okay? It is better than Endgame. No kidding, okay, go back and watch it, I guarantee you, okay? And so now this guy, he has to rally the troops because they're all afraid. Nobody wants to fight against the so-called the Roman Empire of the day, but this was the English, right? And he gave this rallying speech, and if you remember Braveheart, all of us remember it, you know, he was basically turning to his troops and saying, you know, yeah, you know, if you run and you may, you know, fight, you may die, right? Run and you live for a while, right? But many years from now, when you're old and you're dying in your beds, will you give all that up from now until then to come back here one day and tell to our enemies, right, that you may take our lives, but you can never take our freedom. And then they go and fight. Okay, so really amazing, amazing scene. And so as the Jewish people were eating, they must be replaying that. Braveheart hasn't happened yet, okay, in their time. Braveheart was like 16-something. But they must have like a Braveheart moment, and Jesus could tell it. And so Jesus, fearing, okay, because this was not who he is. This was not the kind of Messiah he came to be. And not only that, it wasn't the right timing. Now is not the time to reveal himself to the Roman authorities. There'll be a time for that later. Okay, and so he slips away. Not only that, he tells the disciples, hey guys, let's not get caught up in this. You know, this will not go well. And so he sends the disciples away. Okay, so we skip forward a little bit because there's a lot of scripture, all right? But let me ask you all this question. Have you ever come across people, or maybe yourself, or you know someone that has said this, kind of something along the lines for all that that says, I gave up on faith because I wasn't getting anything out of it. I gave up on being a Christian. I gave up on coming to church because I just feel like I'm not getting, I'm giving a lot, but I'm not really getting anything. I don't feel like I'm really growing. I don't feel like, you know, we tend to have this somewhere along in our journey, okay? And so we want to address this a little bit, okay? And so let's get back to the story, okay? And so Jesus was sending the disciples away, and he says, guys, I'll meet you on the other side, okay? Meet me there. Don't tell anybody. Let's go there, okay? But when he met up with the disciples, again, this crowd, they found him on the other side of the sea, okay? So the crowd, they were figuring out, where did Jesus go? Okay, let's go find him. They found him, and they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Okay, Rabbi, when did you come here? And Jesus knew it's not that they were interested, okay, in how Jesus got there, which was interesting. Go back and read the story. Or why did Jesus go there? All right. But it was more of the manipulative dance that's starting, kind of like Ender, right? He won't tell you that he wants TV straight away. He's like, Mommy, I love you. Okay, Mommy, watch TV. You know what I'm saying? This is the dance that they were doing. They're not interested. When did he get there? And Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me, not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. So he was basically throwing it back, not just to the Jews, but to all of us here, I think. And he's saying that, hey guys, I don't think you're seeking me because, you know, you love me so much. No, you're seeking me because you want food. You're seeking me because you want something. You're trying to get something out of it. That was Jesus was talking to all of them and all of us. And then he says, do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. So he speaks the truth, and he's saying to all of us, do not work. Meaning to say, do not live. Do not work for it. Do not give all your effort. Do not, you know, spend your whole life doing these things for things that, you know, won't last forever. Right? Things that will perish. But work for this. But this is what you should do. Work for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. So he gives them the truth. Hey, you guys don't get it at all. I'm not here to feed you. I'm here to do something that's even more important than food. More important than some of the things that we think we want out of God, that we want to get. But God knows better. And the Jews' response. So they said to him, then what sign do you do that we may see and believe you? What work do you perform? Okay? I didn't put the rest of the verse up, but if you continue, then the Jew says, you know, last time Moses gave the people manna from heaven. What will you do now, Jesus, for us? And Jesus must be thinking, what? You are asking about food again? Didn't I already feed you? Right? They couldn't get out of the mindset of, we want something from Jesus. So that's why they're asking Jesus, okay, Jesus, maybe if you just do one last sign, one last miracle, if you do this for me. You ever heard people that try to reason with God to try kind of, what do you call this? To negotiate with God. God, if only you would do this in my life, then I will believe you. Yes? Same thing is happening here. You know, Jesus, yeah, we've already seen that, but if only you do just one more, you know, then we will believe you. But Jesus didn't, okay? Jesus didn't, and later on in the chapter, you will see that actually many turned away, many stopped believing, many stopped following Jesus. And what was happening was, they just wanted another party trick. They just wanted another kind of magic act. And when the magic act goes away, nobody cares about the magician. All right? And so this was the sign that Jesus was really trying to point out to us that he himself is here in the flesh. Let me put it to you this way, okay? Do you guys know who Lim Kok Wing is? Tan Sri? Yeah, some of you, all the Lim Kok Wing students know, okay? But regardless of what or how you view Lim Kok Wing, if you were to understand him and where he comes from and his past, he's actually legendary. Okay, how he built a name for himself out of nothing, how he built his empire and all, it's actually quite amazing. And if you sit down with him, you can hear and you can imagine and you can feel why he's like, because he's just such a visionary in his meetings. When I hear from my wife who used to work for him, you know, he would just have all these grand visions of how, you know, this can happen and that can take place and whatnot. Okay, and so imagine with me that you had one day a chance to sit down at dinner with someone who's like that. It doesn't have to be Lim Kok. It can be Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or whoever you admire, okay? And this person, after the dinner, he turns to you and asks you, you know, what can I do for you? What do you think your answer is, okay? What do you think you ask from this person, right? I wasn't there at the dinner, but my wife sat down with dinner to Tan Sri before, okay? And she felt, it was an amazing opportunity. I felt so too. I wasn't there, but I thought, man, if I was there, man, I think, again, you know, being me, I'm very selfish and, and greedy. I think I would kind of jostle my way for some kind of position. Hey, you know, Tan Sri, you know what's bothering you? Let me take care of it. Let me settle it for you. I'm trying to, like, you know, position myself to one day, hopefully, you know, I can be the VP of his empire. You know what I'm saying? I'll think along those lines, okay? But my wife, being the perfect human being that she is, okay, it's not like me. She thinks more humbly. And so after the dinner, she came back to me and said, wow, I really regret because we had dinner, we had a good time and all that, but what I regretted was I didn't ask him more questions, more things that I can learn from this guy. Okay, so that was her conclusion out of it. And it should be the conclusion for all of us, okay? Can you imagine if, let's say, Steve Jobs was still around and after dinner, he said, what can I do for you? And then you tell him, can I get a free iPhone 7? You know what I'm saying? You know, that would be a very weird thing to ask Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs has already done so much for the world, so much for, you know, human beings, so much for technology and advancing how we connect with one another and all that. And you're asking him for an iPhone, you know, free iPhone and all that. That would be a little bit embarrassing, isn't it, right? What you should do, what you will probably regret not doing would be the same thing like you want to ask him more questions. You want to learn from him. What you want to ask is not something from him. You want to ask about him. How did he come up with his vision? What was his childhood like? You know, what is his vision for the future? You would ask this kind of questions to enrich yourself, right? And so, it is the same thing with Jesus. It's just that not all of us could see that. And so, the Jews here, they weren't asking for who this Jesus is. They were just asking for one more trick out of Jesus so that they can be happy, they can talk about it. It's like, wow, it's so fantastic, right? And so, question for all of us, okay, especially the Christians here. Are we in this just for the food? Are we in this just for the food? Replace food with whatever you think you can get out of God, okay? Because it's really important. How you see Jesus, how you believe who Jesus is then the way you relate to him. Okay? Back to the quote. It is impossible to have an authentic relationship with someone whom you're always trying to get something. Okay? And I thought, I was so amazed, you know, just yesterday, I was sitting down with Michael, who is not here, the other side. I don't know. Sure, yeah, you guys know. And he at the end of the conversation, he told me, you know, a very interesting thing. He made this statement. He felt that up until now, all the decisions, all the things that he has done has always been centered around career, how to build his career path, build himself, instead of it being about Jesus. And so he feels like he wanted to make it, he wanted to walk in God's will, not his own will. And I thought, wow, that is an amazing revelation, because hardly any of us come to that conclusion. 5,000 men certainly didn't come to that conclusion, not 20,000, not most of us, we do not come to. I thought, wow, this is some revelation. No, I think you should, I think this is God speaking to you. Wow, and so that's amazing. So for all of us here, especially the Christians, can you imagine? Let's assume all of us are Christian in the room. Okay, just a little bunch of us. Okay, don't even count the Christians outside here, other churches in the whole world. Forget about them. What if only all of us are Christians and no one else in the whole world? Okay, all of us. All right. What if for once, all of us being Christians, we don't ask anything from God? That means we're not expecting God to, you know, dispense out things to us. Okay? What if instead of asking things from God, now we are wanting to follow Jesus? We are wanting to do God's will. And so, what if in our lives, right, we started loving people because God first loved us? What if in our lives, we started being more generous with the people that's around us because God, whom we follow, is generous towards us, right? What if we are more compassionate? What if we are more loving? What if we become the husbands and the wives that God wants us to be the parent, to be the son and the daughter as God meant it to be? What if we all started become a little bit more Christian? You know what the result is? If we put away our selfishness, our always asking God for things, you know, we can change the world. I believe it. Even just us in this room. Not talking about all the Christians in the world. If all of us stepped up to really see Jesus for who he really is, we are able to change the world. And people looking at us, they will say, wow, it really must be a God. Because these people, they don't love like other people do. They don't judge like other people do. They don't judge like Christians like to judge. That's a big one, right? They love like unconditionally. Amazing. We can change the world, right? And so, at the end of the book of John, he says this, but these are written, right? Back to the first verse. So that you and I, that we may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you and I, we may have life in his name. This is the key thing. Everything that God thought we needed, he has already given. We don't need another Ferrari. We don't need, you know, another hundreds of ringgit in our wallet. Sure, all these things may be nice, but that's not what we need. In fact, these things are what distract us away from God. Correct? Yeah? And so, it is so important for all of us here to ask ourselves, who do you believe Jesus is? Could you turn to someone and ask them, who do you think Jesus is? Okay? Okay, because your answer will then determine how you live your life. And what John was saying here, because Jesus is the Son of God, the Christ, the Messiah, and if we believe that, it says that we may have life in his name. What does that even mean? It means that regardless of the amount of Ferraris we get in this life, the amount of zeros in our bank account, it means that you and I, we can now call him Father God. We can relate to him as sons and daughters, right? We can have life in his name, that no matter what the situation that's happening or the circumstances, people are, you know, getting sick, people are dying, people are going through stress, we're going through depression, we're going through all kinds of things. No matter what we go through, it says that we will have life in His name, right? And so, who is God to us? Who is Jesus to us? Is He just some magic rabbi, right, that can multiply fish and bread? Or is He maybe God in disguise, right? That God came down to earth in human form to live among us because He loved us so much, right? And if we don't get that, then we will never get Christianity because we will always reduce God to a food truck. And can you imagine this? God that created the heavens and the earth, the whole entire universe, that can make something out of nothing. And we're asking Him to make us food. That is like asking Steve Jobs for a free iPad cover. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of weird, right? But really, it's in the relationship. Okay, so I'm just going to leave this statement there. Let me see. We are ready for the video. Okay, let me give you a handle. Okay, let me give you a handle. Remember what I told you about Michael, right? What he said about God's will and all that. It is the same way Jesus spoke about His relationship to the Father, right? He said, "Not my will be done, but yours." And that's why I want everyone else to come to a point where we don't just ask God for things, but what we're really asking God is, God, I want Your will to be done in my life. Okay, just keep that thought. I'm going to show you today's video talking about meaning of life.
Like to thank you so much for listening in to this life-changing message. Feel free to join us every Saturday, and you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. Every Nation Church Cyber Jaya. Honor God and make disciples.
Over time and space unchanging, your life.